Advice from a dipshit. Advice from a dipshit. Advice from a dipshit. It's advice from a dipshit with Matt Bronger.
This is Advice from a Dipshit with Matt Bronger. I don't know why they need to act like a morning radio DJ every time a mic's in front of me. And that's something anyone who's ever done a podcast wrestles with, or maybe just me after 2.5 years of doing mine. But this is the newest incarnation and the last. Like I've said, this podcast doesn't work out. I don't think I'm doing it anymore. This is like the most fun I've ever had, and the most meaningful. So on today, this day of voting. And I'm just going to knock on all the wood that things worked out for the best for all the right reasons. We've got my buddy Guy Branum on.
Good to be here.
And
Matt, would you like to know why I think you go into radio DJ voice?
Yes, why?
Because you're a professional.
Ah.
And when you show up somewhere, you show up to do it and do it right and give people what they need. Are you going to screw around with the format? Possibly. But will it always be with love and respect? Yes. And that's what separates you from the dickbags or the assholes or the people who just aren't going to try if you want them to try.
Well, you just made my life, man. I appreciate you saying that. I read your book, My Life as a Goddess. And I was not surprised how funny it was. I was not surprised how insightful it was. But I was surprised by how multi-layered and textured it was. Like, I loved your writing.
That's very sweet. That's very kind.
You folks listening, fellow dipshits, should check it out because entirely new perspective in any book I've ever read, and really well put and well explored.
Well, I have to ask you, as someone who has been cornered by me at a party when I'm sweaty from dancing,
sure,
and been yelled at about something that I have opinions about.
Yes.
I really wanted the book to capture that experience.
Mm.
And do you think it really got that level of drunken humidity?
I think in moments, but I don't think it had, you know, because it's like, I love you and we've been friends a while, and that always kind of, you know, you've always been such a stitch to me. I've always found you so funny. And so even in those moments where, and there are times I'd corner you drunkenly.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Absolutely, and make proclamations in your ear. I feel like us big people often do that. We'll bounce off each other like mammoths and go, here's what's what.
Well, also, like big guys who have gotten to a point in our lives where a lot of people are no longer drink because it made too much trouble.
Right.
But who still drink because we've still get to hit that trouble cap.
Oh yeah, totally. It's funny. Lately, like right now, I'm taking a little between you and me and the world. I'm just taking like a little break here, just taking some time off from drinking because nothing happened, you know, no big incident. I didn't throw up on myself or embarrass myself or anything. I just realized when I'm on the road, I've just been self-medicating. I've just been sucking down beers for no reason, where it's just like, and I had this kind of moment where I was intoxicated and was like, you know, this isn't even fun for me right now.
Yeah.
I got to just reel it in. So I don't even know. I'm not doing like Sober November or anything like that. I'm just like, damn, just going to not. You know, I'll probably still smoke weed sometimes here and there, but just like, you know what, just give it a rest for a second and get into like why I'm numbing myself. And it's like, look, part of it is probably not even me. We in a time of a level of anxiety.
Yeah.
And I was saying this to my wife a couple of days ago that I would have a couple of years ago thought unbearable.
Yeah.
And so I give a lot of people, well, everybody who's alive on this planet right now, a lot of credit for just hanging in there and not getting drunk and crashing a car or like, you know, shooting something up in your arm that you know will numb you. And because it's like, I feel like all these substances, alcohol especially, is an anesthetic and it numbs you and it makes you just take a break from the world. So I know I was not reacting to things well. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's been hard to accept that part of the reason I have been a little bit depressed for the past 2 years is just like the world. Like,
yes.
I have been in a less good place because of the world. But I also imagine you're in a different situation than most people who have been married for a year or a couple of years in that, like, you know, like when you go off to do a club, it is a weekend away. And so you don't have your normal social dynamic and the person that you're there with.
Yes.
And it's also a little bit like, haha, I'm on my own. But you're doing that like 16 times a year or something.
No, and it's also like a big part of it is just like you feel a level of loneliness as you get older, if I'm honest, that like, you know, I miss my wife, but I also kind of like, you stare off into the distance of your future. I think once you hit 40, a lot more severely and like unnecessarily. It's so stupid. It's almost like how I used to have this level of kind of like unnecessary nostalgia about my childhood and about like high school and things. And it's just like, you're doing that to yourself, man. Yes. Like, no, you're gonna be fine. Stop, you know, wondering so much and resenting the fact that you're here or you're there or you're not where you want to be or whatever.
I do really love the Portland of your childhood that you paint, though, because anytime I have to think about what Portland, I was watching something recently that took place in the 80s and they referenced Portland or somebody was like born in the Portland then, and I was just sort of like, yes, it is like from Matt Bronger's album.
Yeah. I mean, look, a lot of it was great, but I was also in a bit of, you know, the term bubbles overused. I would use the term like cocoon, because all my mother and father's friends were very progressive, and I grew up with every kind of person as far as you could in Portland, as white as it is. But I was very spoiled in a lot of ways. But at the same time, you still had douchebags, you still had assholes, you still had rapey frat types and shit. Like, there was, that never goes away, and it was never that thing. You know, I don't feel like the Beat Generation were ever like, hey, it's us, the Beat Generation,
right?
Look at what we're doing. But it's like your scene is probably better than you think it is.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And so, like, looking back, we're like, yeah, we should have kind of looked around and going, hey, this is all right, this is kind of cool.
Yeah,
and, you know. But we did have this situation, and as the last thing I'll say before we go to the calls, but like when I was in high school, you had this influx of skinheads and gang members and stuff, and it was just kind of this alien atmosphere of anxiety that I would kind of compare to this, where you're kind of like, wait, what are these people Sig Heiling doing in Pioneer Square? Like, what's this is not Portland, but... It was just kind of my ignorance to the amount of people around me who really, really wanted to find... I mean, really what it comes down to is you join a gang for identity, you join a gang for community. And a lot of these people felt so disenfranchised and maybe didn't have a good home life. And they're just like, no, the Nazis, that's my family. And it's like, that's how they get you. So,
yeah,
that goes out to all those people out there who think Trump's your friend. He's not. Let's take the first call.
This worked out great.
Okay, good.
First call.
Hey, Matt. My name's Evan. I'm 22 years old, and I'm from Oregon. So when I was 18, I graduated high school, went straight to college, just absolutely hated it. Dropped out, came back, and got into a new degree. I went to a trade school for welding, fabrication, and right now, as a 22-year-old, I'm using that degree before I've even achieved it. I work for a construction company. It keeps me on the road a lot. And then on top of that, I'm creating you could call it a business. I don't know. I make these little statues and like art decor for people, and it brings in a little bit of cash flow, and like I'm really proud and happy of it. And as a young guy who's on the road a lot, you know, like 4 out of 7 days of the week, you know, I'm not even this town. I feel kind of distant and separated from my friends. And I just kind of was wondering, when you were at this age and you were always traveling around grinding and trying to like develop that life that you now have in comedy, how'd you kind of balance that all out with your friends, or, you know, and yeah, that's all I'm trying to ask. Have a great day. Bye.
Thanks for calling, man. Wow. God, I'm so impressed by the amount of people in their early 20s who sound like they have their lives far more together than I ever will.
Yeah.
Like, that guy sounded like he probably writes great folk songs and amazing short stories. Was his name Ned? Is that what he said?
It was Evan?
Evan. Where did I get Ned? Probably just a calm, nice name. Evan's such a nice name.
But how perfect after you just had your little...
Yeah, that was amazing. We gave it the perfect accidental intro.
Yeah.
Just real quick, and then I'll throw the guy. I think it's important, A, keep in touch with your friends. Let them know you care about them. Let them know the relationship is still there. But understand, man, they're proud of you. God, you've done so much. And I feel like I've always said... Even when I left college, or when I left Chicago to go to LA, I felt like I'm not necessarily, I mean, I am going for myself, for my career, but it's like the way I look at it, I'm expanding the empire. And the empire is like my circle of friends and people who try to stay open-minded as the people that I love so much do. So just look at it that way. You're going to have times apart. And, man, falling into the trap of staying in your hometown and getting drunk every night and getting high every night with your friends, it's a blast. I did it. Every time I come back from college during the summer and during the Christmas time, I would just go back and just get faded with my friends all the time. We really didn't do anything else. And it's like, I look back on it, it's like, that was so fun, but so? Like, there's you're doing cool things, and I think you'd be surprised how much your friends believe in you. Just the big thing by yourself, when you're by yourself, and it's funny, I talked about this before, just don't drive yourself fucking crazy. If you find yourself going to like a pit of sadness, or FOMO is a big one, just laugh at yourself a little bit, and then maybe go give yourself a little treat, go see a movie, whatever, go to yoga. That's my advice to you. Guy, take it.
I love this question because, like, I like that he's doing something that is practical and something that he loves at the same time, which I think is really important. So frequently when you're 22, you can end up in something that seems like a nice steady gig. And welding, like, being a trained, like, having a trained skill in the construction trades is, like, so great. You make really good money, more than reality show producers do, you know, more than a fucking professor does. Like, it's really exciting. And he's, like, doing something that's, like, creative and is, like, a future, and that's really awesome. But that question of what do I, like, how do I have the social life that I need? The frequency with which I do conceive of my life is just being a game of The Sims and sort of go, like, I will do that. It will make my social bar go up. It's, like, significant. And the thing about construction, especially construction where you have to travel, is that, like, you're working long days. You're working hard days. Like, when I was having to work construction around the same age, I was making so much money, and it was a job that was 2 hours away from my parents' hometown. This was, like, summer during college. Mm-hmm. And I, like, had to wake up at 4:30 and then get home at, like, 5:30. And I literally just had enough energy to shower, eat dinner, and then fall asleep. Wow. I would watch 2 episodes of Welcome Back, Kotter on TV Land and then just, like,
I love that.
Pass out. And I do think the thing is like, you're making so much more money than your friends who are working as baristas and stuff, that it's important to be able to say, hey, I get some time. I get to go and do some things. Like, I get to just, like, spend a couple of weeks hanging out. And I realize it's probably hard. Like, it's weird because construction is a little bit gig-like in the nature of our work.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're working on a job for, like, 5 months, 6 months, and then it's like, where's the next one? But I think we have a stronger sense of hiatus and a stronger sense of, like, and now I don't work for 2 months or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think doing stuff in the places where you're working is cool and all of that, but you're so allowed to take 3 weeks and, like, just hang out and lead the best possible life in wherever in Oregon you are, mm-hmm. and then get back on that horse.
Yeah. Well said. You absolutely nailed it. I love that you compare it to, like, a gig, like working on a movie or getting a writing gig, you know, yeah. being staffed. And you just know, we were just talking before we started recording about the joys of Palm Springs, you know. In fact, go out to Bend, man. Go ski. There's all kinds of stuff. Go to the
Oregon Shakespeare Festival.
Yeah.
Oh, in fucking Ashland.
Oh. Ashland is amazing. Ashland is such a beautiful town. Yeah. So thanks for calling in, Evan. Congrats on having things so together. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Hey, Matt. I got a question for you, and it has to do with success. Here's my question. I'm an aspiring author, and about 2 years ago, after about 5 solid years of effort, I was able to get an agent, and it was an enormous get for me. It was a dream come true, and it felt like the culmination of everything I've been working for was just around the corner. And since then, I've had a series of near misses, each one nearer than the last. So, for example, the first book we submitted didn't really get much notice. We sent out a second book, and a publisher loved it so much, she took it to the board of acquisitions, and they turned it down there. And then in my latest book, a different editor liked it so much that she told me she definitely wanted to publish it, just had a couple notes. And that led to 6 months of constant revision and second guessing. And then after 6 months, she just changed her mind and dropped it. And so I feel like I keep getting closer and closer to having my dream come true, and it just isn't happening. And I guess I wonder what you thought about that. What do you think about, does it make sense if I tell you that it's harder to be nearly successful than it is to be just starting out and not close? I don't know. I just feel my confidence has been shaking more recently than it was when I was first starting out. And I guess I just want to get your thoughts on that. Thank you. Love your show. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for calling, man. Guy, you can take the first one on this.
Well, I would be very interested to hear your perspective on it, because I feel like we're probably going to have the same answer from somewhat different career perspectives, which is how you get towards success is a constant, like it's a set of near misses to the point that when something does happen, you're going to conceive of it as a failure, even though it is something, and you'll be able to take for granted the kind of successes that have been new for you all along. When you think about something, I was specifically thinking, because earlier today I tried to Google USA is Up All Night with Rhonda Shear, and instead it took me to Up All Night, the NBC sitcom on which you were a regular. So think about that. This is me talking about your life in ways that we have never talked about. But going to the audition, getting the call back.
Right.
You get the call back. They like you. They want you to test. You get a pilot. You got a pilot. And then, like, at all of these stages, it can fall apart. Most pilots don't go. Like, most things that, like, get on the air don't last for an entire season. Most things that last for an entire season don't go to a second season. And, like, it's still this thing that was, like, such a series of successes, as so many things in your career have been. Fundamentally, at the end of the day, ended in, and now the show isn't around anymore. Like, my talk show, the game show, died after two seasons. And, like, it's great that I got to do it. And I realize it's easier to say that once you've had a TV show than not. Yeah. But the thing is, like, it's easier for you to say near success is harder than just struggling than somebody who doesn't have a book agent, you know? And like in the writing process, the number of times that I've had things that like seemed so exciting and then just turned into a year of revisions and a year of people changing their minds is hard. And I get so used to that now it's hard for me to realize like, no, like things have gotten easier, guy. Like things have gotten better. And that's just the way of things. I think one important thing, I always have a bottle of Veuve Clicquot in my refrigerator for good news, because I think it's too easy to be like more focused on the work or the annoyance or saying this isn't concretely the good news. And like when something comes and it is a new job or whatever, like that bottle of Veuve Clicquot and I have an evening.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you said everything I was thinking. The only thing I would add is, look, man, you had people fighting for your work. You're obviously good. You know how many books those people read?
Yeah.
So many. That's why the stereotype of the boring, typical, straight white dude is his dream is to write the great American novel. Like, that's in every movie in the 70s and 80s because it's typical. The amount of people that actually write books is probably... It's in the thousands a month. So it's like, look, I don't know if you'll ever be published, but I know you shouldn't stop. Like, what else are you going to do? Because as soon as you stop, you're always going to have that voice in your head that's like, fuck, why didn't I? I didn't, because I just, it felt, you know, it always feels good to give up in the moment, but you're paying the price for the rest of your life. And it's that thing where you nailed it, guy. I've been so close so many times. I've been that guy that it's like, it's down to you and this guy. And it's been the other guy about every time. And it always is. Or you go in.
But also, you're somebody who's on TV a lot.
Well,
you know?
Here and there. Thank you. No, I appreciate it. But I just had something recently where this thing came in front of me that I was like, it's the dumb brother of an older comedian who I kind of look like. I'm not going to say who it is or anything. But I was like, can I just fucking have this? Can we just have this be an offer? But I went to my acting coach and I paid my acting coach and I worked on it a lot. And I went in and I felt like I rushed the audition a little bit. And I did that thing where you're like, can I just call an audible? Can I do this over? And they're like, sure. And then the second time I felt like I nailed it. And I was like, I did everything right. And I didn't even get to test. Like they called and they were like, we just don't see Matt as his brother. And here's the wild thing. I was in Wisconsin over the weekend. I found out. I didn't throw a fit, but I was like, what the fuck? I was like, can we follow up? What the shit?
Yeah.
And then, but then my wife was on a plane with that actor, sitting next to that actor. And
no shit.
And was like, and she's like, she got off the plane and she texts me. She's like, I can kind of see how you wouldn't be his brother, honestly. And I was like, you know what? Okay. And I hadn't seen him in a while and I saw him and I was like, I think we could be related. Brothers is probably too much. So it's that thing where it's like, sometimes it just doesn't, maybe those books, it's just like, we're not looking for this right now, but we love it. I had a book of short stories because I was just so fucking floaty for the year and 2 years ago. I was like, I don't even know what the fuck I'm doing. What's the point of anything? But I would just write these little like funny or scary or weird stories. One I based on a time I found myself in a leather bar in Palm Springs at 2:30 in the morning with a bunch of friends. And me being who I am, I was fucked up. I kept asking everyone if it was okay that I was there. Like, what's more annoying? Just shut up and pretend like you're watching everyone make out, dickhead. So like, I wrote a thing about that, but it was just like, it was fuel. And my lit agent took that everywhere. And my feedback was, we really love the writing, but I just don't know how to sell this. Because he's not known as an author and, you know, it's not about his life. So it's like, anyway, it sucks. And it does in a way hurt more than actual failure when you come that close and you don't get it and you feel like, what's the point? But just keep on pushing.
I feel like stand-up being your first 2 to 3 years of stand-up is just constant failures that are also right. Wonderful. Yeah. And they're like, and I think that was helpful to me. But I also think I have not been able to crack the way that like auditioning is this thing that like you have to go and try real hard every time.
Yep.
And get slapped down 95% of the time.
Yeah, Jason,
and just keep going.
Jason Bateman said it. He was on some interview and he said it best where he's like, you're supposed to go in there, act like it's not important to you at all, nail the part, and kind of just breeze out. And he's like, I was never good at that.
Yeah.
And there's some people that are just, they just are amazing at audition. We had Andrew Santino on a couple weeks ago, and I feel like he is great at auditions. Yeah. He books all the time, and he's just got that kind of normal kind of confidence in the room that, like, I'll have some of, but, like, I'm better than I was, but it's just, it's so fucking weird. But thanks for calling, man, and keep on pushing.
Hi, Matt. I'm looking for some romantic-ish advice. I have had feelings for a good friend of mine for a long time, like years. We've been coworkers for a while, and we actually just moved in together as roommates. More for financial reasons. I don't have a grand master plan or anything. And I'm torn because part of me wants to tell her how I feel, understanding that I could irrevocably damage everything. But the other thing I'm trying to do is I'm just trying to work through them and kind of get past them. We both have baggage. I've been divorced twice. She has her own issues. And I just don't know what to do. I'm at kind of an impasse, and I could really use the advice of someone who has no idea who I am other than a phone call. Love the show. It's great. You're great. Thanks for taking a chance on listening to this. Thanks. Have a good day.
Thank you, man. I mean, this is why I tell everybody to go to therapy. You know, because it's just, it's good to have someone to, you know, look, this is not a clinical show. Thank fucking God. I can't imagine. I would hate to be Dr. Drew. That guy's in great shape, but like, you know.
Arms.
Yeah, he has thick ass arms. I remember saying that. When I was on Mad TV, me and Arden Marine went on the show, and I just kept going like, take his shirt off. No, you look really good. We should have him on the show with his shirt off. And he was like laughing, but you could tell part of him was like a little bit like,
yes.
I kind of like that. But because you have someone you can literally say anything to. That's my point of therapy. But with this, is nice. It's nice that I'll never know who you are. That's a really tough one, but I would just say, man, if you're having those feelings and they, you don't sound like you have bad intentions at all, I think maybe just be honest with her. Because the more you suppress a feeling, I feel like the stronger it gets. And it's just because that's effort. And effort leads to strengthening whatever the thing is. You know, like you go to the gym a lot, you're going to get big muscles. You look at porn a lot, you're going to want to look at porn all the time. You're going to think life is porn. Everything you practice gets stronger. So the more you suppress, the more it's going to be, it's just going to grow. You're just feeding that animal. I think if you actually have, and it sounds like you have real feelings for this person. It's not like you're not calling and going, hey man, my friend's hot. Should I hit? You're not doing that. So it's like, I would just pick a time to have a conversation with her. And tell her, and yeah, it could completely fuck the friendship up, but maybe that's what needs to happen if you have those feelings.
Well, I mean, the living together thing is what makes it much harder.
Yes.
Because, like, there aren't the safe boundaries there, and you have to accept that once you've sort of, like, I do think you have to say something about it because you can't repress something away. I learned that the hard way. Like, you have to understand that, like, she just moved in somewhere with somebody who's, like, her good friend.
Yeah.
And she's also, Amanda, help us out. But, like, she's a woman, so do you think that she has probably smelled this a little bit, or...
Yeah.
I think she's probably smelled this a little bit. It's not, like, going to be a huge surprise to her. But, I mean... If you tell her this, like, throughout the entire thing, you're going to need to respect boundaries.
Yeah.
Like, starting dating someone when you live in the same apartment with them is going to be a weird thing. And if she says, you know, I love you so much as a friend, but this isn't the way I see you, again, you're really going to have to respect boundaries.
I have to admit, though, I have done the thing where I lived with a guy and then we fell for each other.
Oh, really?
That has happened to me. Yeah.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, that was my last relationship.
Were you living in a 1990 sitcom?
I know. No, it was one of those, you know, like, hard on my luck a little, and he had an extra room and bathroom, and yeah, I kind of knew that he had a thing for me, but I trusted him and believed that he had control over it, and then as, like, time went on... Like, I went from being in the extra bedroom to, like, being in his bedroom.
Oh, yeah. I remember I still have this. He's still a very close friend, and he doesn't do drugs anymore. But we were supposed to hang out this one Saturday. And I'm that person that's just like, oh, boy. And I look forward to it, like, hanging out with any of my friends. And he wouldn't return any of my texts. And I texted him probably, like, dozens of times. And I finally went out and did something else with my evening. And part of me was like, is he dead? Because he's not that kind of guy.
Yeah.
He occasionally would mess with Coke, but like in terms of drinking, he'd have like, he's that guy that have like one beer and that's it. Mm-hmm. You know, that rare species.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a hold of me 2 days later and he told me that this girl that moved in with him as a roommate brought like a little bag. And they spent the weekend doing coke and, like, occasionally hooking up. And I'm like, oh! And either he or she moved out within, like, days. But, like, when he told me that story, I was like, oh! I got this, like, this awful, like, itchy feeling. Like, oh, man, I feel so gross right now. Like, and so glad that didn't happen to me. Oh, way to just ruin everything, you know?
Let's focus on the good side, though. If things work out, love can get you a home office.
There you go.
You know, you open up that second bedroom.
That is true. Space is paramount, and that's a good way. That's how when Kyle and Emily Maya Mills were dating, and he was like, I don't know, we're talking about moving in together. I'm just like, yeah, think of all the fucking space you'll have and the money you'll save. And he was like, okay, and they moved in. And it didn't work out after a couple of years, but like, it is that thing where I waited so long to live with anyone I was dating. I was just always scared. Fucking scared. Okay. And I feel like it's just better. Life is better if you just take those chances.
But look at your home now. Also, I would say that your home is a beautiful tribute to all that is best in heterosexuality. Like, bar cart. But also, family photos.
Thanks, man.
It's a good bar cart.
Thank you. I bought that off a couple on a Craigslist who told me that they have a toddler and he would just grab it and push it and all the bottles would fall.
Oh, gosh.
It's got wagon wheels on it. It's got like silver wagon wheels. It rolls. So like it would just smash. They're like, we can't have this.
Yeah, that's probably not the best idea. Yeah.
That thing's been in 3 apartments now. Now a house. Is that it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show, guys.
Thank you so much for having me. That was really fun.
Yeah. And you were dynamic and wonderful, as always. Anything you want to plug while you're on the show?
My book, My Life as a Goddess, is available wherever books are sold. Even though it came out, I still conceive of it as a failure in so many ways.
No.
Also, I will be in Boston at Laughs Boston December 20th to the 22nd. Please come and see me.
Go see Guy Boston. That club is amazing, by the way.
I've never been.
It's like one of those things you're like, they make them this nice and clean and regulate them this well. So the phone number, if you want to get any dipshit advice, is 323-763-0228. On Patreon, we are at Advice from a Dipshit. Keep them coming. We're trying to get on Spotify. We are at Advice from a Dipshit on Facebook, at Dipshit Advice on Twitter. Theme song is by Ben Wise. Subscribe, write a fun review, tell your friends, and see me on my Please Hold Me tour. Just go to mattbronger.com and see if I'm coming to you. And look, keep up the dipshittery, but learn from it. Thanks, guys.
Advice from a dipshit. Advice from a dipshit. Advice from a dipshit. It's advice from a dipshit with Matt Bronger.